Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Thrilled to center field and deep. Back out of his heat, to the track, to the wall, it's gone! Evan Longoria with a two-run home run to straightaway center, and he gives the Rays a 6-4 lead here in the ninth.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
1-2. Now the pitch. Got him swinging, and the ball game is over as Jake McGee strikes out the side in the ninth inning.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our program. This time around, we'll chat with Alex Cobb about his return from forearm tendonitis. Plus, we'll look at the decision to move this series to Tropicana Field and its impact from many different angles. We start, though, with highlights from the week gone by. Last Sunday, the Rays were looking to sweep the Blue Jays. Chris Archer was sick, but still managed to throw 7 shutout innings, and Brandon Guyer backed Archer at the plate.
So 1-1 the pitch, swung on and grounded into the left field, a base hit. This will score a couple of runs as Beckham scores. Kiermaier right behind him, he scores as well. Brandon Guyer, have a day. A 2-run single and the Rays take a 5-0 lead.
Archer, despite getting sick between innings, became the first AL pitcher to go 4 straight starts without allowing an earned run since Zach Greinke in 2009. Brandon Guyer drove in 4 in a 5-1 victory, the 5th straight Rays win. Monday, the Rays met New York in a first-place showdown, tied 1-1 in the 6th. The Yankees took control in the middle frames.
And that pitch, high drive to deep right. This one's on its way. The Yankees shall take the lead, and it settles into the second deck. Home run, Brian McCann, 2-1, New York.
The Yankees ended the Rays' 5-game win streak with a 4-1 victory over Tampa Bay. Tuesday, Jake Odorizzi took to the hill, and a Yankee nemesis for the Rays righty got him again.
Here's a swing and a rocket down the right field line. And that's going to be fair and one hop the wall. Teixeira around third, he will score. McCann on his way to second. Here comes the throw, not in time. RBI double, Brian McCann, 2-0, New York.
Brian McCann now 10-for-16 against Odorizzi, and it eventually led to a Rays 4-2 defeat, the 5th straight loss for the Rays to New York. Wednesday, the Rays, though, would end that streak. It took a long time, though, to do so.
The pitch to Loney. Swinging a slow ground ball to the right side. Here comes Drew to his left. He spins, has no play. They throw home, and Souza Jr. scores, and the Rays have taken a 3-2 lead. What an infield single by James Loney.
And that hit gave the Rays the winning run in the 13th inning. The bullpen threw 7 shutout frames as Tampa Bay won 3-2 and 13 to pull within a game of the Yankees for first in the AL East. Now, Thursday, the Rays were off, and then Friday began a quote-unquote road series at the Trop against Baltimore because of the unrest in that city. Alex Colomé made his first start with the Rays after being sidelined by pneumonia, and boy, was he sharp.
Colomé pitches, swing and a miss. He went around on the breaking ball, and Alex Colomé strikes out the side here in the 4th inning, carving through Jones, Davis, and Pierce.
Eventually went 5 scoreless. He and 4 relievers did not allow a runner beyond first base, and the Rays shut out Baltimore 2-0. And then yesterday, Chris Archer gave up his first earned run since opening day with this hit, a game changer.
Here's a swing and a drive to the gap in right center field again. Souza Jr. and Kiermaier giving chase. This one is off the wall, though. It one hops the wall. Paredes will score. Davis rumbling around third. Here's the throw to the plate. And now they're going to throw to third, and they are going to get Steve Pierce out trying to advance, but not until 2 more runs come across home plate. So the Orioles get to Chris Archer.
Steve Pierce continued his fine play against the Rays with that 2-run double. Baltimore sets up today's rubber game with a 4-0 win yesterday over Tampa Bay. Hey, you'll flip over the limited edition Rays tumbler when you buy any Rays Flex Pack starting at just $59. Save up to 50% and pick any 3, 6, or 9 games with no blackout dates. Plus, get half off parking when using the funds loaded to your Rays card. Everything tastes better in an official Rays tumbler. Get yours at RaysBaseball.com or call 888-FAN-RAYS. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball. Coming up, my sit-down with one Alex Cobb. How is he doing? Find out right after this on the Rays Baseball Network. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our featured guest this week is Alex Cobb. Alex, I'm sure fans first want to know, how are you doing, and where is your progress right now?
I'm moving along slowly, but I'm moving in the right direction. You know, it's the most frustrating DL stint I've been on just because I have to listen to the elbow and let it dictate my next move, and it wasn't moving as quickly as I'd like, and it's still not moving as quickly as I like, but I got one shot at getting back healthy and not get any setbacks, so I have to be very careful and diligent in my next in my steps and my processes to get back on the mound.
Where are your steps right now? Where are you in terms of your progression? Bullpens and how far before you start facing hitters?
I've thrown three bullpens. We haven't discussed yet where we're going to go from there. Should shortly be hopefully be facing some hitters. Like I said, I have to listen to my elbow. When I do get done with the bullpens, it tightens up a little bit. So I have to take that into consideration and understand that that's not 100% healthy. And I just have to, you know, sometimes give it a day here and there. That's the tough part, is people are asking and, you know, understandably want to know when I'll be back. But I can't tell you. You know, if the elbow could talk, it would tell you. But you know, I have to listen to it and let it dictate when I'll be back.
When you're throwing, are you at least pain free?
Yeah, you know, that just started happening recently. And even when we're in that mode, you know, we can still tighten up here and there. You know, if you let it eat one day, let it go full out, it might be tight a little bit the next day. So I'd say we're pretty close to being out of the woods, but we have still some force to go through.
This is the first time you've had to deal with really an arm injury. I mean, you had the oblique injury last year, obviously the line drive off the head. You had the rib removal. Has it been harder because of it's actually been something that, you know, they say it's not long-term, but, hey, it is your living, and it is what makes your living is that right arm.
The living part of it, the personal aspect of it has not been too difficult to deal with. It's been as same as any other. The difficult part is seeing your buddies out there playing every day and leaving on road trips and just watching from outside and seeing the energy this team has this year and the camaraderie and how well guys are in it and just playing for each other and not being a huge part of that. You know, that's the toughest part. It's on a personal level this year. It's just not being out there with the guys.
One would common sense would think, hey, it would make it a little easier because they are doing so well without you. They're hanging in, but in your standpoint, it's almost the opposite, it sounds like.
Well, that's a selfish standpoint. You know, the fact that I'm looking at the team and we're at the top of the East, battling every night, puts a huge smile on my face. I'm sitting on the couch at home watching the games when they're on the road and jumping out of my seat. You know, and I'm number one fan right now. And I think the cool thing about that is I know I get to come out and join this team at one point. It's almost like being a fan and saying, man, I wish I could play ball for that team one day, you know, when you're a little kid. And I get that opportunity at some point this year. So them winning makes it a lot easier than if we were losing, if that's the question. But, you know, from a selfish standpoint, you want to hurry up and be a part of it.
Does it help to have Matt starting to get real close to in terms of his return? I know he's set to face hitters now.
Yeah, man. I one good thing has been through this process is I've been able to really get an inside look of how well Matt's come along. I've been his throwing partner. I've sat in every bullpen and watched, and, man, it's going to be fun to watch when he gets back. I know that, you know, there's probably going to be some growing pains for him to come back and just not being on the mound for over a year and facing, you know, big league hitters and things along that line. But, man, his bullpens are tremendous. They're fun to watch. They're electric. It's the same Matt Moore that all the fans are excited to see. And, you know, being able to watch his progress and knowing that he's going to be joining us shortly is a lot of fun to be a part of.
Alex Cobb with us on this week in Race Baseball, and certainly we hope you're back on the field real soon. I mean, you had, I guess, what would be considered, besides from the forum, a very eventful spring training. You became an uncle for the first time, right?
I did, yeah. I was that's another thing that stinks about this injury. I was supposed to go to the my first visit with my new niece, Jade, was supposed to be up in New York, and then again in Boston when we were going there, and I'm going to have to delay my visit for a little bit to get to meet her, but if I had my phone out here, I could show you probably 70 videos that my brother sent me since they brought her home. So, you know, I feel like I've seen every giggle and every yawn and every burp that she's made since she was in existence. So he's kept me in the loop very well, and I can't wait to get to finally meet her.
You did add a family member, right? You still got the dog from spring training?
Yep, we still have Oscar. He's running amok around the house, but him and Axel have become best friends, and you know, it's just the energy the dog has every day is awesome to see, and knowing that he's in a better situation now than he was when we first found him is very nice.
Did you ever find out truly who the owner was of that stray? I know you found the original, but then they had said it was passed on to someone else.
Yeah, I mean, kind of connecting the dots now and just having ourselves removed from the situation a little bit and some time passed, and talking to, you know, people with similar situations, it's most likely that the people that we talked to were the owners. They got kind of embarrassed or scared that the Humane Society contacted them and made that up, and probably just let the dog go. And they're just trying to cover their end. So it's really sad because the Humane Society says that happens all the time. It's something that I feel like the awareness is there. You see a lot of commercials for adopting pets and dogs, cats, whatever it might be, and it's something that even Longoria is a big part of with
Pet Pals
here in the St. Pete area. So you know, it's nice that it brought a little bit more awareness to it too.
Indeed, and you know, I know you bring awareness to a lot of things on a positive end, and one of those is what kind of got relived this week with Archie Bradley getting hit by a line drive. Were you able to watch that? Are you able to look at that kind of stuff multiple times? And I know you talked to ESPN about him getting hit by the line drive.
Yeah, it's difficult to see when you hear it after the fact and have gotten all the reports that he walked off on his own and he's okay and there's no long-term damage. It makes it easier for some reason. It makes it easier to see and just kind of see what happened. And, man, that was pretty graphic to see, and just to see how his face swelled up. Very shocking he walked off on his own power. That was really nice to see. The awareness, unfortunately, it keeps being reminded and keeps being brought up, unfortunately, because we keep having these incidents happen. The Major League Baseball and the players are trying to get to a perfect situation to where we can have this head protection on where it meets requirements, and it still is very viable for the players to wear and the pitchers to put on without hindering their mechanics at all. So the process is going in the right direction. We made some adjustments to the model, last year's model, so this year's model. So things are going in the right direction. It's just we're not quite to the point where we want to be in that having all the pitchers wear it and adopt that headgear.
You endorsed the IsoBlox product. They came out with that youth product last year. Is that even getting better too?
Yeah. We're hoping that that's going to be implemented throughout Little League Baseball. You know, kids will be forced to wear it, you know, and I think that's where it all begins. If we can get the youth to wear it, be brought up with it as they go into middle school and then high school and pro ball and college, it'll make it easier and it'll make it almost second nature to have that protective gear on your head. As to having a major leaguer who's never really had any equipment on them while they're pitching and ask them to make that adjustment. So it's just, this would be a much smoother. It'll take time, but that's what we're our goal is.
Again, Alex Cobb, our guest in this week in Race Baseball. And Alex, as you work your way back from injury, do you try and look at the positive of this, that when you do rejoin this team, you don't have to worry about an innings limit for hopefully October? Because, you know, you were very positive about all the change that occurred here, and it seems like things are much different, at least the first month and change.
You know, it's not very often that what you envision in the team and what you see the pieces getting put together and playing themselves out are exactly not only as you hope, but you as you envision, that that's the way it's going right now. You know, the team, the energy level on this team, the speed, the just – I mentioned a lot about how I felt like this team is just going to play better together. And I feel like that's the best way to describe what I've been seeing on TV right now. It's just everybody's playing off of each other. It's just fun to watch the speed and the making situations happening, not waiting for them to happen. It's just a refreshing type of baseball that we've been seeing played. So that makes me chomp at the bit even more to get back. You know, I want to be a part of it. I want to be a part of the energy that's in the dugout night in and night out, and just, you know, enjoying it. You know, every time you're on the DL, I think you appreciate, you don't take this game for granted. You know, there's over a course of 162 game season and spring training, you know, it becomes a little mundane and it becomes a little monotonous every day showing up and playing big league baseball, and it should never get to that point. I should, you know, really appreciate the fact that of my health every day, and I wish I didn't have to keep being reminded of that, but as long as I'm on the DL, I'll take that away.
Well, it'll be refreshing to see you back on the mound in a game. We look forward to it soon. Thanks for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
All right, Neil. Thank you, buddy.
Alex Cobb with us. We'll continue right after this with Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times and take a look back at this strange week with road games at home after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Neil Solons. We're going to hear from Mark Topkin and several others who have covered this story with this series moving from Baltimore's Camden Yards at Tropicana Field in just a moment. Right now, we're going to take a look at the Rays minor league system, and so far, so good in the Rays system. In fact, it's been probably the best start of any team for the Charlotte Stone Crabs. That's in High A in the Florida State League, and their new manager this year was with Bowling Green a season ago. That's Michael Johns. They're 15-8 so far. Michael, thanks for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming on. Let's start with, again, what's been a very good run so far. And within the past week, you also had what I would consider the first major prospect in the system to be promoted this early, and that's Blake Snell. He's thrown now 27 scoreless innings to begin the year, 21 of them with you. What impressed you the most about what he did in a short time?
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to have Blake for, you know, parts of 3 years. I had him in Princeton his first year, and last year he was really good in Bowling Green. They moved him here, and then obviously we had him half the year here, and then he moved to Double-A. And really that was kind of the goal from the beginning, to get him 3 or 4 starts and get him to Double-A. But he was really good. He's as advertised. He's, you know, left-handed with high velocity. He can throw all his off-speed pitches for strikes. I think the thing that impressed me the most this year was his ability to throw his changeup and his curveball in any count. If he fell behind with the fastball 2-0, he could throw the changeup, keep him off balance, and he was really able to pitch backwards. And when you're able to do that and you throw 96, 97 from the left side, there's always going to be a lot of success. So he really had a lot of hitters and defensive swings, and there just wasn't a lot of comfortable bats off of him. And I think he's going to do really well in Double-A, and I think his first outing he was really good. I think he went 6 innings on 1 hit, if I'm right. But he was really, really, really good, and he's just really matured and a good teammate and just the kind of kid you really pull for.
Indeed, and yes, he did throw 6 more shutout innings, so the streak now at 27 and going. Again, we're chatting with Michael Johns, manager for the Charlotte Stone Crabs. You have a lot of talented prospects at that level. Who else has stood out in your mind this first month?
Yeah, we've got some good players. We had a lot of trades in the offseason. Fortunately, these guys are coming to High, and I was just looking at our roster. We are a really young team. I think 10 of our 21 players are ten of our 25 are under 21. 7 position players are 21 or younger. We have 2 20-year-olds that are in the lineup every day and 2 19-year-olds. And, you know, just to start with Willie Adames, our shortstop, who was kind of the key trade with David Price, has been really good. His average has kind of fluctuated, you know, with the short amount of bats he's had. He's gone from 280 to 240 to 250 to 260, but he's put on some really good at-bats. He's hitting third in the lineup, and again, he's 19 years old in high A, and he's certainly getting pitched very tough, but he's been really good. He's played a really good shortstop. He's made a lot of really good two-out plays that have won us a bunch of ball games. Then to go to first base with Jake Bowers, who I think was probably one of the best hitters in the Midwest League last year, and I think we got him in a trade in the offseason. But he's been really good, and he's hitting fourth for us, another 19-year-old who already has four home runs. And I think the thing that's impressed me the most about him is he's played really good defense, and he's got a really good eye. He's getting pitched backwards a lot, getting pitched tough, and he's able to spit on those pitches that he needs to, and he's able to really get on pitches that he can. Two nights ago, I think he had a 3-0 count. He hit a two-run home run. We ended up winning the game 2-1. So he's really an impact player. Andrew Velasquez, another guy we got in the trade, has been really good. He was up to 320. He got hurt his shoulder. He was finally off the DL last night. But he's a really, really high-energy, kind of set-the-table kind of player. He can play a lot of different positions. He plays third, second, short, hits from both sides of the plate. And last year, I think he broke a record with, I think it was 72 games he reached base in a row, which is just, really, I can't even calculate that. Keon Wong is a guy we drafted, and I think he ended up hitting second in the league last year in the Midwest League, another 19-year-old that is really playing well, too. His defense has come a long way. I know his average isn't where it probably will be at the end of the season, but he's really played well.
And a guy that I wanted to touch on, too, with your pitching staff, he's a former first-rounder, Ryan Stanek. I know he threw another good game for you yesterday, at least numbers-wise. How has he looked? Because he missed a lot of last year due to injury.
He looks really good, and I'm glad you brought him up. He's had some tough luck. He's had really good starts. Every outing he's had has been a quality start where he's given us five, and we've held him to five innings on purpose until last night to get him six, just to try to keep his innings down for the most part. But, you know, he's got a record of 0-2 with a 2.10 ERA, and he's been really good. I think the thing for him that I see from last year to this year is his ability to throw strikes in any count. He's really working his fastball in and out. His velocity yesterday was as good as it's been in the last 2 years. I think he was up to 96 in the first two innings. He was able to throw a slider. His arm just looks real comfortable. The ball is coming out easy. He's throwing some really good changeups, and he's pitching with confidence. You know, I think they had a couple of runners on yesterday, and there was some situations where he was able to pitch out of jams, and that was really good to see.
One other guy I wanted to touch on, and again, Michael John, Charlotte Stonecrab's manager, with us on This Week in Rays Baseball, is a kid named Jake Faria. He's known mostly for his, you know, he got an award last year for community work, and the numbers he's put up this year have been phenomenal, a 1.19 ERA in his first 22 innings.
Great kid, great teammate, and he is having one of the best starts that maybe I've ever seen. You said 4-0, 1.19, and it's legit. They really have not put a ball hard in play off of him. It might be a couple of scratch runs here and there, but he's been really good. He's filled the zone up. He's one of those guys that can pitch at the top of the zone and get outs. I think Drew Smiley's, and I know that they're different pitchers, but Drew Smiley's similar in that he can pitch at the top of the zone and get those, you know, those fly ball outs. And Jake Faria gets a lot of fly ball outs, and that's what he's been successful at. And he's really, really done a nice job with working his butt off on his mechanics. And he's been a quality start every outing. I think he's gone six almost every single outing he's been out there, and he's been really good for us.
Well, so far with all those young kids, you've done quite well. 15-8 in the Florida State League, best winning percentage of any Rays affiliate to this point. Michael Johns, thanks for being with us. I'm sure we will talk with you plenty during the course of this season.
Always a pleasure, Neil. Thanks a lot.
Again, that's Michael Johns, manager of Bowling Green. Now, certainly the big story at the big league level for the Rays this week was the moving of the series from Camden Yards to Tropicana Field. And joining us now to talk about it from Baltimore's side of things is someone who should be familiar to many of you in the Tampa Bay market because he used to cover the Rays as well. I guess when I say welcome home, I say it with a double entendre, which since you are the home team this week, Eddie Encina, thanks for being with us from the Baltimore Sun.
Thanks for having me, Neil. Appreciate it.
Tell me what this week has been like covering it from the Baltimore side and how strange this has been.
It's been strange. It probably hasn't been the strangest thing that's happened, you know, over the past week. I mean, and I think that, you know, everyone within the Orioles organization, within, you know, the beat writers that cover the team, we all kind of know that, you know, baseball kind of pales in comparison to what's going on in our city and what's gone on in the past week. But, you know, with the combination of the, you know, really what started Saturday with some weird some strange occurrences with, you know, the gates at Camden Yards being closed during, you know, protests that went through Camden Street, there being a lockdown at the end of that game where fans weren't allowed to leave the park, then going on to the postponements, back-to-back postponements, Monday, Tuesday, when some of those riots became really, really bad. And then Wednesday's game in front of, you know, no fans, and then the series being relocated here, just kind of unlike any week that I've ever seen in covering the team and covering baseball and just covering sports in general.
Has it been difficult personally because you're leaving home while all this is going on back in Baltimore?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm a native Baltimorean. Obviously, I spent 8-9 years here in Tampa Bay, but you know, Baltimore is always my home. It's always going to be my hometown. But, yeah, it's tough because I think going through it all and seeing some of it, you know, you always, you know, you see other things happen elsewhere, and you never necessarily think that it's weird when you see it happen in your city. And a lot of the stuff I saw from the perspective of being inside the ballpark and stuff like that. But it's tough because you know, we the Orioles play the Rays a lot. I think, you know, Orioles fans and Rays fans have a common respect for each other. And I think in a lot of ways, the franchises somewhat marry each other in the terms of that, you know, they're not the Bostons, the New Yorks, or even the Torontos, those big spending teams. And that, you know, in Baltimore, the Orioles kind of, you know, they're so beloved because of the way they are. They kind of fit the blue-collar mentality of the city. And, And that's one of the reasons why they fit. So a lot of people in town wanted the Orioles to play these games, you know, earlier this weekend or open the stadium on Wednesday. But I think it was probably the best option of postponing and closing the Wednesday's game because mainly just because then you can devote a lot of those resources, you know, the off police officers, the National Guard troops that were in the city to really kind of, you know, doing important work elsewhere in the city instead of, you know, being stationed at a stadium to kind of guard a stadium during a baseball game.
Eddie Encino with us again from the Baltimore Sun on This Week in Rays Baseball. And Eddie, from the baseball side of things, we know that Buck Showalter is a very good manager, mm-hmm. but how has he handled this situation? Because this is a challenge that you don't expect when you get this kind of job.
No, I don't think anyone expected any of this kind of stuff. And he's done a good job. I mean, he's kept it all in perspective, I think, and that's really kind of been the important thing. Like I said, he sent the message to the public, to the fans, that you know, there's bigger things that are going on here than baseball. You know, before the Wednesday game, Adam Jones, who's kind of been, you know, really the, you know, he's obviously one of the team leaders, one of the more vocal players on the team. He was really good too in terms of you know, putting it all in perspective. And you know, to him, he was saying that, you know, he sees a lot of this stuff go on. And as an African-American male, you know, there's sometimes when you can understand some of that stuff and you can understand some of the frustrations, but at the same time, you know, going about things with, you know, violence and rioting and looting and stuff like that isn't the right way to go. So I think the Orioles players have and Buck and the staff have all done really well. I mean, in terms of really kind of, like I said, putting everything in perspective and, you know, while knowing that there is a task at hand in terms of completing the baseball season and doing so within certain parameters and knowing that, you know, that's what the job is right now, is just to continue the baseball season and continue to play competitively. And I mean, they've had a weird month, you know, not even including last week, you know, all the injuries that they've been racked with. And you know, to say that they've gone through all of that and they sit here going into the series finale at 500, I think they've, you know, really got to feel pretty good about it.
In fact, I think the Rays and Orioles are probably in similar boats in terms mm-hmm. of the way they've handled injuries. Does what has gone on, does it become somewhat of a galvanizing effort for this group? I know that Boston kind of used the marathon a couple of years ago as their rallying cry, so to speak.
Right. It'll be interesting to see. I think we'll see some of that stuff when they go back home. Yeah, because the fans, you know, we've seen it's interesting. You've seen a lot of fans here at the Trop, and you know, I think the Orioles fans typically travel well here, but you know, after this, they go on the road to New York for a week, playing the Mets and the Yankees. So I think, you know, once they get back home, I think their next home game is May 11th, which is probably a good thing because it allows the city to kind of settle down a little bit. You know, I've heard some, you know, rumors and Facebook pages on Twitter that they, you know, the fans want to organize kind of a reopening day kind of thing on May 11th when they come back to town. So I'm really excited to see how that kind of happens and how that works because, you know, baseball is so important in the city of Baltimore. And like I said, a lot of fans want them to play on, but like I said, it was probably the wisest move to not. But, you know, like I said, as far as the team goes, I think it is a galvanizing thing. I mean, these guys, anything that you go through together as a team, you know, whether it's the obstacles of season, injuries, overcoming, you know, certain other obstacles, it's all, I think it all kind of helps you in the long run because it, you know, obviously it shows that you can get through it and persevere.
Good stuff. Eddie, we appreciate a few minutes on this Sunday. And obviously, best of success to you and at the Baltimore Sun, and hopefully better news in the city going forward.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Eddie Yuncina from the Baltimore Sun. You can follow him on Twitter at Eddie in the Yard. We'll continue after this on the Rays Baseball Network. Welcome back to This Week in Rays Baseball. Neil Solon's with you as we get set for the last of three between the Rays and Orioles, a rare road series at home. And joining us to chat about this now from a national perspective is one of the senior reporters in the game. That's Hal Bodley of MLB.com. Hal, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
How unique is this? I mean, you've covered so much over the years in the game of baseball. How strange is this to see a home team playing on the road, so to speak?
Well, you know, it really is different and unusual. I thought Friday night before the game, the first pitch, it was very, very unusual. And then it was baseball at its best, good pitching baseball. But, you know, when you look back onto all the events in our society, things that have happened, baseball really has to take a back seat to it. And that's what's happened now. I think this was a great test for Rob Manfred in his first year as baseball commissioner, how to handle this. I think it was handled very, very well. And the fact that we're going to move on after this is behind us, I think is a good thing. But, yes, it's unusual, no question about it, coming here and seeing the Rays batting first and the Orioles wearing their home uniforms and that type of thing.
And then even before that, having a game with nobody going into the ballpark other than media and scouts at Camden Yards.
You know, that's really true. But, you know, this is real life. This isn't baseball. And I think it was a wise move not to do that under the circumstances. They'll go home, I believe it is, on May the 11th, and hopefully everything will have calmed down and we'll be back to usual. But, you know, back in 1972 when I was in Munich covering the Olympics, and, of course, there was a very dreadful Israeli massacre, that, for me, as a reporter, I was younger then, it put everything in perspective. I realized that sports, no matter how excited they are and how much we enjoy watching them, that everything is kind of not revolves around the real-life aspect of it, and that's helped me an awful lot over the years.
Is there anything that, from your perspective, that this reminded you of or was any similar to in terms of, you know, the way a city had to handle an event or the way, as you mentioned, Rob Manfred, a commissioner, had to handle a tough situation?
I think back maybe to 1992 in Los Angeles during the Rodney King problem. There was rioting and everything, and I was with the Phillies at the time, and they were playing the Dodgers, and they really didn't know what to do all of a sudden because it was very close to Dodger Stadium. I remember the game, the helicopters were flying over. It was very eerie. Even obviously, they canceled the games after that for a few days. That was very much like that. And then when the Detroit Tigers won the World Series in 1984, I was in the press box, and we couldn't leave the ballpark because there was rioting out in the streets, celebrating in one way or another. But it was actually rioting in the streets. It was so bad that the owner of the Tigers, Tom Monahan, sent in a helicopter with pizzas because he owned a pizza company at that time.
Wow.
That reminds me a lot of that. And then, of course, we had the 1989 earthquake in San Francisco and incidences like that.
Again, we're chatting with Hal Bodley of MLB.com and trying to put what's happened this week in some sort of perspective. From a baseball standpoint, for Baltimore, this certainly becomes challenging. Maybe not this week, but I would think going forward, they're going to lose an off day at the end of May. They're going to have to play a doubleheader. That's the next time that the Rays are in Baltimore. They'll come on right after the doubleheader. This division right now is so jam-packed from top to bottom that any little movement can kind of upset the apple cart, so to speak, too.
No question about that. Buck Showalter was saying the other night, what happens if the day of the doubleheader with the White Sox is rained out, if we have a bad weather day that day. How are we going to work that out? It's going to really, clog up the schedule a little bit for him. But life goes on, and this is baseball. Baseball, as many, many people say, is just a game of challenges. I mean, the way the teams travel, the way they have to do certain things, the rainouts, the late starts, that type of thing, they'll adjust to it.
I asked Eddie Encina from the Baltimore Sun the same question. How has Buck handled this? What's your impression in chatting with him and being around him? Because you've been around him, I'm sure, many times over the years where he's managed several different clubs.
I mean, he said all the right things. I mean, I don't think he could have handled it any better. And he said each time prior to the games here, prior to the game against the White Sox with no fans at Camden Yards, he talked to the players, and I think he put everything in perspective and had them come aboard because, you know, he often says, and I just love this, Neil, he says, we play the game in the moment. And this is in the moment. We take care of this moment now, and then we turn the page for tomorrow. And that's what he's been able to do with this ball club.
It certainly doesn't hurt that he's got a lot of veteran players, too, to be able to handle the moment. I mean, they won 96 games last year. Adam Jones is kind of the face of the franchise right now, too.
He is the face of the franchise, and he's an African-American. I mean, he grew up in, I believe, San Diego, where he had a lot of problems in his neighborhood and that type of thing. He often said that if he hadn't have moved on to sports, he might have ended up like some of the people in his neighborhood. And I think he was able to pass the message along to his teammates about what this is all about and why they have to do what they're doing. And they could not have responded any better.
Certainly, again, not an easy situation. And from the Rays' perspective, you know, this is a unique, I guess, way to be able to help out another club, so to speak. And it seems that it's been well received the first couple days of this series with fans coming in at a reduced price, thanks to the Rays and Orioles kind of agreeing on a fairly good happy medium on ticket prices.
Well, I think so, too. And let me jump ahead a bit. I think the fans, especially on Friday night, were amazing. They were so spirited and so loud, even though it was such a small crowd. But, you know, Chris Archer's awfully young, really, as a player and also as a person. He's the player rep, of course, for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I thought his comments were just positively, very, very articulated, well, very, very good. And I liked the way he handled it, why they were coming here, and why they didn't want to do other things involving the ball club, like going to Washington or Philadelphia, or even switching the series, which a lot of times that happens in a situation like this.
Yeah, it certainly would have been interesting if that were the case, even if it were played in another city. And there was precedent for it. I mean, you go back to Katrina, they had to move, the Houston series up to Milwaukee.
That's happened many times in baseball, you know, maybe for one game or a series or whatever, because ballparks are, you know, under damage control or something like that. But no, I think they did the right thing to come here. I think it just works out well. I think the teams have had a chance to think about everything, especially the Orioles. They say that they're, 1,200 miles away from Baltimore, but their hearts are there, and they're thinking about hoping and praying and everything. It turns out well for the people in the city of Baltimore.
Well, good stuff. Hal, we certainly appreciate a few minutes and always enjoy your thoughts and take on what's certainly been an interesting week at the Major League level.
Thanks an awful lot, Neil.
Again, that's Hal Bodley from MLB.com joining us. Let's take a look from another perspective and hear from a guy who handles team travel for the Rays and the challenges that he faced this past week in Chris Westmoreland.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and joining us now is Chris Westmoreland. He is the director of team travel and also clubhouse operations for the Rays. And have you had a chance, Westy, to catch your breath yet after everything that has gone on this, I guess, quote-unquote road trip?
Yeah, actually recovering now. But it was a busy, and it was a busy time for a lot of us, not just me. But, with all the player moves and then this Baltimore fiasco here, I think it had a lot of people on their toes for sure.
What was the hardest part about all of it?
I think the most, I wouldn't say difficult, the most time-consuming part of it was just getting set up in all those cities. You know, there was a chance that we played in Washington, and there was a chance we played in Philly, and then obviously the Baltimore scenario, and then late was a chance of coming back here. So just preparing, everything that has to do with a road trip to all those cities.
Which means getting, in some cases, planes, trains, automobiles, hotels, you name it.
Well, starting with Baltimore, if we were going to go into Baltimore, originally we were going to take a train. I called an audible due to the proximity to the riots there in Baltimore. We switched gears and went to a plane there. We were going to switch to a plane into Baltimore. So that was the primary thing. And then after that, when Washington and Philly came up, it was setting up trains, planes, and automobiles in those cities.
Did it make it any easier, since you already had a plane, to have a plane that was now going to Tampa or St. Petersburg instead of going to Baltimore, or how much harder is that?
Well, that's what was difficult, is I was in the process of trying to get a plane to go to Baltimore. I still didn't attain one until late, when we found out we were going to Tampa. So at the time when Washington and Philly came up, we still didn't have a plane to go to Baltimore if we were going there. So it was, you know, I was joking the other day about, you know, planes aren't like taxis in New York. You know, you can't just find them. And Delta does a great job of making sure those planes are always running, you know.
Having been with the club for many years now, is this the most unique travel situation that you can remember? Obviously, you haven't directed team travel all that time, but how rare is this?
I think it's really rare. The other situation we had was in 08 during the World Series, when we ended up staying in Delaware. And I know Jeff Ziegler, who I learned a lot from in this whole process, that was hectic. I mean, that was on hours' notice. At least I had a few hours more than he did to obtain all these different scenarios.
And part of it, adding to it, is the fact that the roster has been in constant movement because of all the injuries, too.
Absolutely. I'd be lying to say if this wasn't the probably the most difficult 3 weeks of my career here in Tampa, just because there was so many moving parts. I've been here 18 years, and I've run equipment, clubhouses, minor leagues, major leagues, and this was a busy time. Just movement, player movement, injuries, and then this Baltimore thing that came up.
Let's hope it slows down.
Huh, please, I hope it slows down. I'm going to get some rest in Boston, that's for sure.
That's Rays Director of Team Travel and Clubhouse Operations, Chris Westmoreland, who certainly had his challenge this week. I would guess Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times had those too. Look, he had to change his whole travel situation, and he's got to worry about himself to get from point A to point B. Mark, thanks for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
No problem, Neil. Glad to be here in the Batcave.
Appreciate you coming on. How strange was this all for you? I mean, you've been covering the Rays since day one. How unique was the situation? How difficult was it?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some times where, you know, there have been one-day games rescheduled, and rain out, stay over a day, you know, go from point A to point B, or a little unorthodox. But this was different in that, you know, it involved the whole weekend and did involve some shuffling. I mean, obviously, Chris Westmoreland had a monster task. I just had one person to worry about, but, you know, had to cancel. Actually, had three or four different hotels in Baltimore trying to figure out what was going to be the best situation there. It's near the ballpark, not near the ballpark, out by the airport. Canceled the train, had to rebook some flights, obviously flying from Tampa now tomorrow morning to Boston rather than from Baltimore. So it was hectic for everybody, but obviously it was great to get home for a couple extra days and, you know, see my wife, be in your own bed, cover the games at the Trop. I mean, all those benefits.
Certainly there were a lot of challenges for the Rays in putting this all together. We heard from Westy. We're going to hear from Rick Nafe, who heads up VP of Facilities and Operations, in just a moment. But, I mean, your take on the way this was all handled from a baseball standpoint, from the challenges that the Rays faced standpoint.
I thought it came off very well. I mean, I talked to Buck Showalter before the game on Friday, and obviously I'll be curious to see his take as he gets through the weekend. But, you know, I thought this was handled pretty well. He seemed to think it was a good setup. He said this was the best solution available. You know, I think the Rays have done a nice job in being, you know, deferential to the Orioles in a way and treating it as a neutral game, not as a Rays home game. But, you know, they're not going to also put, you know, go Orioles on the scoreboard and work against their own team. So I think the Rays have handled it well. I think the fans have responded well. I thought last night's crowd was pretty good. I mean, for short notice, you know, the general admission seating seems to be a big hit, actually. It might be something the Rays might want to consider for a game or two somehow, and if you can work that out logistically. But people are getting here early. They're enthused. They're getting to see the Rays take batting practice, which is unusual because they're hitting in the second slot. So there's been a number of things, I think, that have been very cool. And it was, I thought, a classy move by the Rays to play John Denver's song, Thank God I'm a Country Boy, in the seventh inning, which is what the Orioles do at Camden Yards.
They even had their special cookies in the press dining area.
Shh.
We shouldn't.
I had a couple of those. Be quiet.
Well, we can enjoy them too. Hey, one of the things they may have gotten to see today, I don't know if the doors were open early enough, was they might have seen Matt Moore throw off a mound today, which is the first time since Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, I mean, really the first time any of us have seen Matt Moore, you know, in a real situation, even though it wasn't a game since, you know, early April last year before he had the surgery. And he looked good. He threw 25 pitches. I thought what to me was interesting was velocity was good. Not great, but good. 89-92, I think, is probably pretty good for the first time off a mound. Two hitters. Threw 25 pitches, mixed in all of his pitches. So you saw a couple curveballs, saw a couple changeups. He felt good. He looked good. Everybody seemed pleased. Everyone seemed upbeat. He broke Jake Elmore's bat. I mean, there were a few signs there that it was. And one thing, right about halfway through the session, Matt Moore turned to Jim Hickey and said, this is a new intensity out there. And, you know, that ramping up, the fact that there were fans, he would have been doing this in Port Charlotte early this morning, probably with about six people watching. So the fact that there were a couple thousand people in the ballpark, he was on the major league mound, you know, there were people in uniform. He was in full uniform. I mean, there was a lot of things going on that, you know, amped us up. But, you know, it's still going to be a little while. He's got to do a couple more of these. It'll be in a five-day schedule, and then he's got to go through a rehab program. He's hoping only four starts. The Rays may think more, but he could be back pitching in the big leagues, you know, realistically by that third or fourth week of June.
And obviously injuries have been a major situation with this team. What were the reactions like behind that, the L screen or the screen that was in front of him, or as Jake Odorizzi, and I know other members of the rotation are watching, because, you know, they have such a very tight-knit group for a pitching staff.
Yeah, I think everybody was pleased. I mean, the other pitchers that were watching him, the members of the administration, the staff, there were a lot of people with eyes on Matt Moore. And, you know, Kevin Cash said, and I think I'm quoting him fairly directly here, was they needed to see something good this morning from Matt Moore after last night when they had to make the decision to finally put Desmond Jennings on the DL. So, you know, I think it was a little bit of an encouraging overall sign for the Rays, but, you know, this injury thing has just gone on and on.
I want to get to Jennings in just a moment in terms of Kevin Cash this whole week. I mean, this whole month. I mean, he's had more on his plate than most first-year managers will have in their first full year, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just knowing the names of all his players is probably an accomplishment. I know he said the other night he was happy he didn't forget they were the visiting team. You know, you think about all Kevin Cash has had to deal with, the uncertainty in the rotation, the constant stream of injuries, the shuffling of the roster, you know, some moves they wanted to make that they couldn't because of 40-man limitations, some they could, and then having this schedule, you know, this series rescheduled for the Trop. I mean, there's been a lot for Kevin Cash to deal with, and, you know, the fact that the Rays have a winning record, I think he's handled it very well. You know, he had the one game in New York where he, you know, admitted that he probably, you know, should have intentionally walked McCann. I mean, so that was a moment, I think, for Kevin Cash, kind of a learning moment as well. So, yeah, his first full month has been quite eventful.
And certainly handled it reasonably well, all things considered. The club 13-11 entering today. And today, Desmond Jennings, the 14th player already on the DL. We're talking May 3rd. The season really isn't a full month in.
Correct. Good math on that. And it's just been staggering. And, you know, there's no common theme. There's no trend here. I know people are starting to ask, you know, is this a reflection on the training staff, things like that. It really isn't. It's been a series of odd and unrelated things. And, you know, some of the guys they knew were going to be out, obviously the spring training where they lost a couple guys further. You know, now Desmond Jennings, I mean, to me the question is, and you know, Kevin Cash said they are not concerned. They think it's just bursitis. But I think it's a fair question to raise, was he missed a month at the end of last season with a problem with his left knee. He came back this year. He didn't play yet a full month into this season, and he has a problem with his left knee. I mean, they're saying they're happy, you know, they're confident and they're happy that that is what's wrong. Desmond Jennings said he needs rest and some time, and he'll be back out there. But you just have to wonder what's really going on in that knee, only in the sense that it's bothered him again for the second time. He didn't have anything done to it during the offseason. It was supposed to be a rest and strengthening program then as well.
So a mix of good and bad news this week. You touched on some of it with the roster in today's Tampa Bay Times, your Sunday piece.
Yeah, I was looking at both some of the roster moves that they've had to make and kind of how this team got put together in terms of, you know, where these guys all came from. There's been so much talk about that other draft this week or so, that football thing or something.
Yeah,
the Bucks
some
got
guy.
A quarterback maybe. And just kind of looking how the Rays put their team together through the draft and how they've had to react to different things. And then, of course, coverage of, you know, the various roster moves that they've had and, you know, keeping up. And also had an interesting item in there on Luke Maley, the odd incident he was involved in at AAA Durham where the catcher threw the ball and hit Luke Maley from 6 inches away.
And if you look at the video, it doesn't look very promising in terms of the way it was handled either.
Not at all. And you know, I talked to Luke last night and, you know, he politely said, when I asked him if he thought it was intentional, he said, well, all I'll say about that is guys who've played baseball this long don't usually miss like that.
Exactly. Mark Topkin, he's covering everything, and we certainly appreciate him joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Anytime, Neil. Glad to be here.
All right. That's Mark Topkin. And as we mentioned, Rick Naif is the Vice President of Baseball Operations and Facilities for the Rays. He offers his perspective on this week.
I think that it's not totally foreign to us. Because it's you go through a lot like this, a lot of situations like this with postseason play. You don't know if you're going to be playing the next day or the day after or the day after, so you have to be ready. It's kind of like what the Lightning people are going through right now, like what we did the last several years when we got into postseason play. So it's unique in fact that it's we will now have worked five out of six consecutive weekends. That's unique that no one's really excited about.
Was it hard then to staff? Because I'm guessing that some people thought, okay, I've got these two weekends free and I don't plan on being in town or have something else planned.
It wasn't really difficult because our numbers dropped by by virtue of the fact that we were able to close the 200 and 300 level and reduce the scope of the stadium. We normally would run about 1,000 people all total when you count center plate and parking and cleaning and everything and all of our people. So we're operating this one on about with a 700 count. So it really wasn't that difficult to find bodies that were willing to work.
What was it like when you got the call, and how long did it take to kind of put the plan to action?
Well, I got an email from Brian Ald, I think it was Tuesday night, asking what we were doing this weekend as far as event-wise, because we are we pretty much lead the Major League Baseball in non-baseball events by virtue of the fact we have the turf to go on, and we happened to have a free weekend. So knowing that was a possibility, we then started working through our subcontractors, SP Plus Parking, Night FM for the cleaning, Sentry for our security, making sure that they were all on standby, that we may be ready to go, and then we would reduce the number of parking lots. We would reduce the number of gates and then, of course, reduce the seating. So it was a manageable situation.
What's the greatest challenge?
Greatest challenge is keeping our groundskeepers happy. They were the ones that, after we found out that we definitely had a free stadium, it disrupts their schedule a little bit with the field and everything. So they were good with it. They're a good bunch of guys, and they work hard. But everyone has that sense of proprietorship, and that which is good. Like, we all own a piece of the building and a piece of the team, so nobody was really out of sorts, so to speak.
How much different is it from a normal home game, though? Because you mentioned some of the changes staffing-wise, but it's supposed to be this weekend neutral.
Yeah, for us, it's really not going to be that much of a change. It's going to be a big change, of course, for our fan experience people and the in-game entertainment people and things like that, who won't be doing too much and keeping it a neutral site like that. But for our people, it'll pretty much be the same.
And in terms of any other situations, you mentioned how it was somewhat similar to the playoffs, not knowing if or when, but because of the unique circumstances as to why games were moved. Is there anything else you've experienced in your times that compares at all?
Not really. That was the first thing that popped in my mind as far as the just preparation to go from 0 to 60 in 60 seconds or whatever. It's very common to do that with postseason play, so it really wasn't too far out of the ordinary for our people, especially with the fact that they were monitoring the situation and in Baltimore, and knowing that it might be the possibility that we would either switch weekends or they would just bring the games down here.
And that's VP of Operations and Facilities Rick Nafe on a challenging weekend. Hey, play Evan Longoria's walk-up song from your own home with the Evan Longoria Walk-Up Music Bobblehead, presented by Sun Sports. When the Rays take on the Rangers Saturday, May 9th, all fans receive an Evan Walk-Up Music Bobblehead while supplies last. For tickets, call 888-FAN-RAYS or visit RaysBaseball.com. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us on This Week in Rays Baseball. Next week, we'll chat with Steven Souza Jr. on a special Mother's Day edition of the show. If you ever have something you want to hear, tweet me at Neil Solons. The pregame show next on the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Driven in the air to center field. Kiermaier going back at the wall, jumps up and makes the catch.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
3-2 to Looney is launched in the air, right center field. This one's on its way, and the Rays have tied it up. A homer for James Looney, and it's 5-5.
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.